All right, everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters. It is great to be with you guys. Sorry I didn't have an episode for you last week. I had just gotten back from SHOT Show and all that craziness, and just did not have time to record this. But this week, I am going to do a little solo podcast. Don't do this too often, but just didn't also really have time to do a recap podcast in Texas for the Audad hunt. It was a short 3-day hunt, and the guys from Canis, which I'll tell you about later, but they had to actually dip out early, unfortunately. But anyway, I wanted to use this opportunity to do a little recap on the Texas Audad hunt, and also recap. So I went directly from that Audad hunt to SHOT Show in Vegas. So I wanted to recap that a little bit, talk about some of the cool new stuff coming from some of my partners, and a big announcement at the end, which I'm pretty excited about. But we'll get there at the end. So stick around till the end. This should be a good one. And yeah, let's just jump right in. So basically, I guess it was about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had organized a hunt with West Texas Hunt Organization. They're out of Van Horn, El Paso area. And they're kind of one of the more affordable outfits out there as far as Audad go. Like, just as much as everything else, you know, demand is going up for Audad hunts, and they're getting pricey. West Texas Hunt Organization seems to be one of the more affordable options. That being said, it's pretty Spartan, I guess you could say. Like, it's not fancy lodge and fancy food. It's there's DIY options available, and it's kind of just a little Spartan is a great word. So anyway, I booked that a while ago because I had a great hunt there last year, which you can actually go and watch that hunt from last year. It's my most recent hunt film release on my YouTube channel, an Audad hunt from last year, and it was actually on the same piece of ground that we hunted this year. That's a really cool hunt. You guys should go check it out if you haven't seen it yet. It ends in a very exciting way with me having to take a follow-up shot at like 20 yards at a Audad running full sprint. So anyway, go check that out on the YouTube channel. But we're talking about this year. So this year I invited my friends and partners from Canis Athlete. So I reached out to Kurt, who is their main marketing guy and probably wears a lot of other hats too, and to Ryan Eford, their CEO, who I've done a podcast with as well. You can go back and check that out if you want to hear more about Ryan and his story. But he's a really cool guy, veteran and a successful entrepreneur in a different industry. And then, you know, really caught the hunting bug and has done some amazing hunts all over the world. He's actually done a sheep slam, which is pretty crazy. Like he was telling us stories about hunting blue sheep in Nepal and bighorns in British Columbia and all over the place. He's been to some just amazing places and had some really cool hunting experiences. So, you know, that kind of speaks to an Audad hunt too. It's, you know, obviously quite different from a, you know, Nepal blue sheep hunt. That's for sure. And the price tag is way different, but it just kind of goes to show that you can have a similar cool hunt on a unique species. Now, technically, I think Audad are goats, but it's very much like a poor man's sheep hunt, and it's really cool country out there, especially, you know, in the wintertime. To me, the desert is beautiful. I was kind of explaining to the guys while I was out there, like, you know, I grew up in swampy stuff, you know, wet, a lot of decaying vegetation and mud and just stuff like that. So going to the desert, like, it just looks like I'm wa or feels like I'm walking through like a botanical garden or like a Zen garden or something. It just feels like clean to me in some weird way, or like manicured, which it's not, but it's just like, I don't know, it's hard to describe. When you're used to walking through muck and mud and rotting, decaying vegetation and water, going to the desert, like it has this like clean, beautiful, mystic kind of feel to it. So anyway, I love the desert, especially that time of year, and all that are really cool animals. The rams can be impressive, and they're unique, you know. Ecological impact might not be the greatest, but here we are. They're there. So get out and shoot one if you can. I would highly recommend the Audat hunt. It's a cool hunt. Anyway, I invited Ryan and Kurt from Canis. They came along. And so we flew out to me and my esteemed cameraman, Jamin Davis, Mountain Bird on Instagram. We flew out to El Paso, and from El Paso, it's about a 2.5, 3 hour drive to where we were hunting. We picked up Ryan and Kurt at the private airport, and we headed to the ranch. So, you know, right away, we were all, you know, messing around, telling stories, having a good time, and, we got in to the ranch house, had some dinner, and pretty much it was straight to business right away. It was only a 3 day hunt, so we woke up the next morning, went out and shot rifles, which, you know, something I always recommend to everybody after traveling. You know, even with a quality optic and rifle, you just never know what happens on airplanes. I've even heard horror stories of, like, you know, PETA inclined TSA officers like opening gun cases and like intentionally sabotaging optics and dials and stuff. So, you know, I don't know if that actually happened. I heard that happened, but anyway, either way, I always check my rifle. I mean, you don't want to get there into the moment of truth and your rifle's off. So we checked our rifles, and wasn't long before we were out on the trail. So, you know, this is kind of one of those kind of hunts where you can just go hike kind of blindly. But we had 3 days and we were trying to kill two rams. And these ranches have a 29-inch minimum on rams. So that's a big, you know, 10, 11-year-old Audad. You know, it's not just like shoot any Audad you see or any ram you see. It's got to be a big, old, mature one before the guide who's there with you. And that's really why the guide, our guide Steve, we had the same guide as last year. He's a character. You can see him on the YouTube video. That's really like his main job is, you know, granted, obviously he also knows the properties and stuff like that, but like it's really hard to field judge these things. Especially when you're coming down to inches. Like if you're trying to tell a difference between like a 29-inch ram and a 27-inch ram, that's tough to do, and it takes a lot of experience. That's one of the main reasons why Steve was along with us, and we had a great time with them. He did a great job. But anyway, we headed out, and it was, man, it was right off the bat. Again, we got into a big group of sheep. And, you know, being that I had invited Ryan kind of as my guest, I said, hey man, like you're up first. You know, I wanted to make sure he had a good time and had a good experience. But of course, being the southern gentleman that he is, would not allow that. And you know, asked him several times, but said, hey man, like you go first. But he was just like, nah man, like it's your show, like you go for it. So he kind of gave me the first at bat, if you want to call it that. And so we saw a group of, I don't know, man, it's probably 25, 30 sheep. And we saw them, but when we initially approached them, and again, what I was trying to say earlier, which I kind of got off my train of thought, but you can just like walk blindly into these spots, but really it makes more sense to use like a side by side or something, especially since we only had 3 days and trying to kill two rams, to cover as much ground as you can and use your glass, hit glassing spots, and try to find animals at that point. Then you can hike in after them. You know, it's just a better percentage odds of success than, you know, hiking blindly into a canyon on day one. But anyway, that's what we were doing. When we crested the top of this ridge, we looked up and there was a group of, like I said, probably 25, 30 sheep, and we were a little bit too close for comfort. They kind of saw us, weren't too happy about it. They weren't freaked out, but they weren't too happy about it. And we decided to leave two guys, Ryan and Kurt, at the rig because we figured if we all went after them, that might raise even more suspicion. So we kind of quickly grabbed our gear, me and Jamin and Steve, and headed off basically to get behind the ridge in front of them, under their eyesight, and work our way up as close as we could, and then peek over, hoping that they would still be there in the same spot. So that's what we did. And, of course, they were not there. they had gotten nervous from the vehicle, and we crested the ridge, and there was no sheep. So then, at that point, it's kind of a guessing game of where you think they may have gone. And as I found on this hunt, typically they don't do necessarily what you'd expect. So we went where we thought we'd be able to see them again, you know, up over the next little ridge. It's kind of like breaks-y kind of country. It's broken, lots of ravines and drainages and small to medium-sized hills. It's not like giant country, but it's pretty rugged. So there's a lot of folds and cracks and little seams they can get in, and they're experts at hiding and disappearing and that stuff. And then you do have some larger cliffs and stuff like that. So, but anyway, we went to where we thought they were, and they had actually worked down the ridge from us. So we're kind of like perplexed, like looking around, like, where'd they go? Then like we look behind us, and they were basically behind us at that point. They saw us and we're gone. So that started your typical kind of cat and mouse game where they would top over a ridge, we would drop down, pop up, see them. And so that happened again. We dropped down after sorry, I'm like losing my train here, but so once we saw them behind us and they went away, we followed again. They went over the next ridge. We went down and popped back up. And this time we did relocate him again, and we saw him. And I got set up on my rifle. I didn't have a whole lot of a window, but we saw a U, and we knew that the group was behind that U. She was kind of nervous, and then a ram popped out behind her. He looked good to me. I had him in my crosshairs. I could have shot him, but again, you're waiting for the go-ahead, from the guide because of the 29-inch minimum. You know, I don't want to make them mad and shoot something small. Plus, it's the first day, they were just borderline. They were like right on that edge where, like, from a distance, we were like, yeah, they're shooters. But when we got up close, you know, 300 yards or so, Steve wasn't quite sure. So I never got the go-ahead to shoot. So I did not shoot. And so they eventually worked down away, and we did another little game like that where they went over the next ridge. We followed. This time we're just about to crest the ridge, and I slowly poke my head up, and I just hit the dirt because there was a U like 20, 30 yards from us walking straight at us. So there was literally nothing we could do other than just hunker down and stay as still as possible. But at that distance, I mean, she walked within 15, 20 yards of us. And at that distance, like, pretty much any animal on earth is going to know something is up. So you know, after she busted out, the rest of them left. And at that point, we had kind of one encounter in a potential shooting opportunity with one of the bigger Rams in the group. And we just didn't feel like there was anything in there that was like definitely a big Ram. And, you know, also, since I'd hunted last year with Steve and we shot a 31-inch Ram, really nice Ram, we were trying to find something bigger. Like, we didn't want to just get a 29. Like, we were trying to find a big old crusty one. And like, when they get old, it seems like every old big mature Audad has some type of scar on his face. And like, that's what I was really wanting, was like a big old scarred up one that had been fighting, you know, marked up face. So there were some ones in there that were borderline, but we just weren't sure, didn't pull the trigger. And at this point, we had been away from the other guys in the rig all morning. It was almost noon at this point. So we decided, you know, it's not worth continuing to just push these sheep everywhere when we're not sure there's a big boy in there. And also, like, we, you know, pretty much spent half the day with the other guys just, like, sitting at the side-by-side. So let's get back. It's a couple miles back at this point. And so we hiked back. And, yeah, it was fun. Good encounters. Could have killed one. We just weren't sure that there was a big crusty one in there. And they just weren't big enough. So I was fine with it. And, you know, now it's Ryan's up to bat. So we spent the rest of that day, I believe, if I'm getting things straight. Yeah, we spent the rest of that day looking, and we looked high and low. We did see some more sheep. Not a ton, but we did see some more sheep, but there was nothing in there, definite shooter. So that was kind of the end of that night. And also, it was super windy. I mean, like, super, super, like, I think 45-mile-an-hour gusts on some of the ridges, which created something I've never experienced before, which was an insane amount of dust in the atmosphere. Now, I've been on plenty of smoky hunts, and that's the closest thing I could liken it to, is a very smoky, you know, Western hunt. But it was just, the atmosphere was completely full of dust, which I'm looking at the pictures right now, created this really insane sunset that I've never seen before. It was a completely, like, monochromatic white and gray, like, grayscale sunset. Like, you could look directly at the sun. It was so diffused, and it was just silvery white. And the ridges were just different levels of gray. And it was the most interesting thing I've seen. I mean, the most interesting sunset I've ever seen. Completely colorless sunset, and so diffused that you could look straight at the sun. And you can actually see on some of these pictures, like, sunspots on the sun. It is really wild. But anyway, we stopped and took some pictures of that, then headed back and had a nice dinner. I think we had just some grilled, I don't know, might have had steak that night or something. But anyway, and pretty much just, you know, sat around, BS, told stories. The guys drank some beers. I don't drink, so I just kind of hung out and told stories and BS'd and went to bed pretty early. I was pretty whipped. Next day, we, same thing, got in the rig and headed off. And I think we spent most of the morning looking, didn't see a ton initially. Then I think later, about mid-morning, we did see a group of maybe 15 or 20 sheep. And there was, it was mainly ewes, I think a couple younger rams. But there was one in the group that we could tell was good enough we wanted to get a second look at. So these things are probably, I'm going to say, about 2 miles, maybe 2.5 miles away when we glass them up. Which I gotta say, Steve spotted him, and it was pretty impressive spot. He is pretty dang good at glassing these things up. They are not easy to see at that distance. So, I mean, they just blend in so well with the desert landscape and stuff. But anyway, At that point, we drove a little bit closer till about, I'd say we were a mile and a half from the sheep. And we got out, got packs. And at this point, we all went on this one just because it made sense. And I wanted to capture it and make sure that it was captured right. And not that I don't trust Jamin, but it just worked out this way. And it was actually pretty cool. So we hiked down this creek bottom for about 3/4 of a mile. And then we start climbing to get kind of on the opposite ridge closest to these sheep. And we got up there. We relocated the sheep. The ram was bedded. We were able to get behind this big outcrop of rocks on the top of the ridge. And at that point, Steve set up his optics, got a really good look at the ram. And he was able to confirm, yes, this is a shooter for sure. At that point it was game on. So, Ryan got his rifle situated and was able to actually find a cool spot on the rocks where he was able to get prone, which is not easy out there in the desert, I gotta say. So that was a blessing. And Ryan was able to get prone. At this point, there's probably about, man, I don't know, 10 yards or so between Steve, who's set up, you know, looking at the sheep and is, you know, ultimately the guy saying, yes, this is a shooter, go for it. And behind him, Jamin is set up on the long lens with the camera. And then, so there's a kind of a distance between where it's like, there's too much distance between them to be able to effectively communicate without like talking too loud. So that's where it was cool that I was there. So, you know, in the heat of the moment when you're trying to record and pull off a shot and all that stuff, it's a lot. So like, and especially with one camera guy, because there's a lot of action going on that Jamin wants to capture as far as like getting ready and getting set up for the shot and like, you know, double checking the ram to make sure he's old enough and all that stuff. But at the same time, like he also has to get the long lens set up and on the animal, which is very important and can be very difficult sometimes. So he's, you know, kind of torn. What am I shoot at that point, which is why I'm so glad I was there. And it was actually really cool to play this kind of more of a producer role as opposed to like normally I'm just kind of, you know, in hunt mode. I was able to be like, Jamin, don't worry about this stuff. Get your long lens set up. That's priority one. Don't worry about it. I got the rest. I had my camera with me. I was able to shoot some of the other stuff. So he was able to completely focus on getting set up, tripod set up, big long lens camera, good footage on the ram. He set up. At this point, I belly crawled over to right next to Ryan. I was able to get my camera set up on him, on the shooter, able to see his face and all that, get some cool footage, because that's also a pretty crucial angle, you know, in my opinion. And I don't like to recreate stuff later if I don't have to. So I was able to authentically get that shot, which is awesome. I got the camera set up on a rock. And at this point, I'm ranging the sheep, giving ranges to Ryan. I'm relaying information, you know, between Steve and Jamin and Ryan. I'm able to kind of talk Ryan through it a little bit. So that was really cool to kind of play that role of, yeah, kind of producing this shot, and no pun intended, like the shot with the gun and the camera. Talking Ryan through it, making sure we had the cameras ready, everybody was communicating. When Steve gave the final word, Ryan couldn't hear him because we were too far away, so I was able to kind of like just be the middleman and help communication and just produce that and kind of make it go smoothly. So that was cool. It was a team effort. Obviously, Jamin did great on the camera. Steve did great on the glass. You know, Ryan did great on the rifle. It was a team effort, but it was cool to be able to play a part in that as a producer on this episode. So, anyway, Ryan made a great shot. One shot. The thing, I believe it was still bedded. So, but yeah, Ryan made an awesome shot on it. It stood up, kind of messed around for a second and died, you know, in about 20 seconds or something. And then, you know, typical high fives and all that. And we hike over there, get some great trophy shots, cut the animal up and pack him out. And that was that. And it was clean. I think it was right at a 29-inch ram. So nice, good ram. I think a 10-year-old, maybe 11, but I think a 10-year-old ram probably. Got some awesome trophy shots. There's a reel right now, actually, on my Instagram. It's, I think, the most recent one with some cool shots of the ram. So check that out at The Hunter's Quest if you're not following along already. But, yeah, it was a great time. And then we got back and we started doing some more glassing. And then at that point we got word, actually, from Kurt's wife that Kurt's mother-in-law had some very serious health kind of emergency happen, and they live overseas. So at that point it was kind of, I mean, it was a legit like family emergency. So we had to kind of, you know, shift focus and figure out, like, you know, helping them get back so that he could get back in time to meet up with his wife and then go see his wife's family. So that was kind of the priority for the rest of the day. We did some more glassing, but we wanted to make sure that Kurt was able to take care of his family stuff, because obviously family first. And so, yeah, we were able to get him. They got packed up that night, and we were able to get them off to the airport the next morning, no problem. And Kurt could take care of what he needed to take care of. So best wishes and prayers go out to Kurt's family. I believe she's doing much better, his mother-in-law. But anyway, glad that worked out. But that left one last day for me and Jamin and Steve to try to kill a ram. So, but at this point, you know, we'd kind of looked over a lot of the country, and it was still pretty windy, and it had gotten much colder that last day. And so kind of what we figured was that the sheep in the colder, windier conditions, they're going to come off the tops, and they're going to be in the bottom of these drainages and stuff, and you know, these dry drainages. And that's kind of what we're thinking, why we weren't seeing the numbers. We're thinking they're, you know, they're off the tops, they're down on the bottoms and staying out of the wind and trying to stay warm. So we had to kind of change it up and try a different strategy. And that strategy was basically parked at the top of a dry riverbed, and we were just working our way on foot down the riverbed, just glassing as we went and just kind of hoping to catch some rams. And it's funny, it's like, I'm sure you guys will relate to this, but there's always those times where you're kind of going on your plan B or C on a hunt, or it could be anything in life really, and sometimes you just have that feeling in the back of your head like, well, we're doing this to try because we don't want to quit, but this isn't going to work. You know what I mean? Like, it just, I got to admit, there was something in the back of my head, like, just saying, like, you know, we're just kind of going for a hike. Like, we're not actually going to see anything. This isn't going to work, which was a mistake. And I did at least have the wherewithal to, like, I took my rifle off my pack and got it off of the, you know, out of the scope cover and all that. So I did have my rifle, like, on a sling on my shoulder. But still, I wasn't, like, and I'm not the only one. Like, Steve and Jamin, the same way, like, we were kind of glassing far off and not really expecting our plan to work, I think. And so we're walking along, and we're glassing, like, you know, a couple hundred yards away to the north. And then, like, we see movement behind us, again, and we look over, and there's this group of five rams, big ones, at like 120 yards, just staring at us. And Steve's like, "They're all big. Just get one." Like, which I've never heard him say. But he's like, "They're all big." Like, he didn't have to pull up his glass or anything. He could tell, like, "They're all big. Just like go for it." So, this is where I kind of messed up. I got my pack on. I do have my rifle out, which is good, but I'm so used to just like dropping my pack before I shoot, I guess, that it was just kind of like in the heat of the moment and muscle memory, like I start trying to get my pack off, which was a mistake, but that's what I did. It was another example of not like mentally preparing yourself for like, okay, what if there are sheep right down here in the mountain or right down here in the drainage? Like, what am I going to do then? And that goes back to not ultimately really having confidence in our plan, which is stupid. Like, if you're going to do something, like, plan on it to work because it might. And if you don't plan on it to work, you're not going to be ready when it does work. So that was a mistake. So that's my biggest lesson from this trip. Like, don't beat yourself before you even try. Like, if you're going to try something, do it right. So I wasn't mentally prepared. I wasn't really ready. The rams are staring there, like 100 yards looking at us. I'm fumbling with my pack trying to get it off. I got caught on something, so it took me a couple extra seconds. Finally, I get it off. Then I run up to this rock at the edge of the drainage, at the edge of the creek bed, and I get my crosshairs like just onto the last ram in the group for literally a half a second as he's walking over the back. And, could I have? First mistake was if I had just forgotten about the pack, left it on, and run straight up to that rock and got set up, we'd be having a very different story here. But that was the first mistake. Second mistake, or not mistake, but if you watch the YouTube film, you'll see that my first shot I took on my ram was not ideal, which required that dramatic follow-up, which made for a cool footage, but it's not the ideal situation for a hunt. Like, you want to make a clean, quick kill on the first shot. So, I didn't want to get in another situation where we're looking for a wounded ram. So I got up there, got on him, and like I said, maybe a second, half second, as he's walking away, quartered away, topping over a ridge, I just didn't feel comfortable, so I didn't rush that shot. And then we quickly ran up this thing to try to see if we could re-find him. Long story short, we never saw him again. We spent the rest of that day glassing and hiking, put in some serious miles that day. Saw some other sheep, some ewes, and some young rams. We never saw that big group again. I didn't kill a ram on this one, but I'm okay with it because had a great trip, had fun with the guys from Canis. Ryan got a nice ram. We're gonna have a cool episode to report from this one still, and I'm coming out of it with another great lesson learned about not defeating your own plans, even if they seem like small chance of success. You should go into things expecting success. And that's a biblical principle too. I mean, Jesus told us that, if you pray and ask for something, believe that you have it. And it's totally a biblical principle that, you should, and just being, walking in faith means that you expect success. So that's my biggest lesson out of this one. Don't defeat yourself going into a plan, even if you think it's a low chance of success. But like I said, not too worried about it. Can't kill every time. And we got one nice ram on the trip, got a good episode and had a good time. So yeah. And I'm running out of room for skulls. Anyway, I'm looking right now and I just got back my Euro mounts from this year, a elk, a deer, and an antelope, and also my bear. So, my room is starting to look a little ridiculous. Like, I gotta figure something out. But grateful to have that problem. But anyway, I'm gonna take a short break, and then I'm gonna go over the trip to SHOT Show and all the cool new stuff coming out. And then I have a big announcement at the end. Stay tuned. It's pretty exciting. Thanks, guys. Okay, we're back. So anyway, after having a great hunt, you know, we left Brighton early, drove to El Paso, and I hopped on a flight to Las Vegas for SHOT Show. Now, SHOT Show, if you're not super familiar with it, it's basically a giant trade show for anything hunting, outdoor, law enforcement, tactical, military. But it's all like business to business. Like, it's not a consumer show like the Expo where you can just buy tickets and go. You have to like send them documentation proving that you have a company in the industry or you can't even register to go. So it's a different feel. It's more, like I said, business to business. It's meetings, it's making new connections, it's firming up old relationships. And it was very cool, I will say, because, you know, last year going to SHOT Show, you know, I had an amazing growth year this year. I really focused heavily on my YouTube and my social, and I want to say thank you to all you guys who are listening now, who have subscribed to my YouTube, those of you who have been following along for a long time, and those of you who are new, because I saw like about 388% growth on my YouTube subscribers this year. Went from like around 7,000 or 8,000 to like 33,500 in 1 year. And on Instagram, same, I went from like 10K to about 23,500 subscribers. And that was my really focus this year. If you're a diehard podcast listener, you may have seen the podcast suffer a little bit this year because of that, but I am committed to sticking with the podcast. I have some great stuff coming down the line on there as well. But I just want to say thank you for your support. Thank you for watching the videos. Thank you for sending me messages. Thank you for leaving comments, participating in giveaways, sharing with your friends and family. Really appreciate it, guys. And please, 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 I just have one request from you. You know, I work hard to put out a lot of good content for you guys, and I really care about the quality of it. Just my only request is just do what you can to support me. You know, check out products from my my partners. Use the discount codes when it's available. Quest is my code everywhere. Not all of them I use codes with. I don't want to get too commercial and make every single piece of content that I come out with be like, use the code. That's just not how I like to operate. You know, you can use my code. I will just say you can use my code at Mountain Ops, Seek Outside, Canis, and Onyx Hunt. Quest is the code. But like I said, I don't want to be just pushing codes all the time. So that's not what I'm trying to do. But mainly what you can do for me is you can share with friends and family. You can send videos to people. You can share stuff on Instagram. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can show it to your friends and ask them to subscribe. You can follow along on Instagram and keep listening to the podcast. So anyway, thank you, thank you, thank you. It's been a great year. And on that note, like, SHOT Show just had a different feel for me this year, and I was very grateful and humbled by that. You know, last year it was pitch, 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 pitch. I was just going up to everybody I could and just, hey, I'm this guy. You've never heard of me. I know my numbers are small, but I'm growing, blah, blah, blah. I just pitch as hard as I can. And it was fruitful, and I'm thankful for that. But this year just had a different feel. It was more about, and yes, I still did some pitching and, you know, made some great new connections, but that wasn't the only focus. There's also a lot of just meeting with current partners and solidifying those relationships and some new ones, which I'm about to get into. But it was very cool to have more friends and more colleagues at the show, as opposed to just kind of a guy trying to pitch everybody. It's just a different feel, and that's because of you guys for your support. So thank you. And I'm going to keep bringing you good content. I'm going to keep working with partners that have amazing, excellent products that I believe in and actually use, and, do my best to be authentic, you know, and keep bringing good stuff. I'm in this for the long haul, and I'm not stopping. This is my calling. I believe this is what God created me to do, and I'm not stopping. I'm loving every minute of it, so thank you, thank you. Okay, so on that note, a couple of the main companies that I met with that have some really cool new stuff coming out that I want to mention really quick: Eberly Stock, Leupold, Manfrotto, MDT, Tactical, and Mountain Ops, to name a few. And not all my partners were at the show, so if I didn't mention you, I still love you. And you know, actually Barnes has some really cool new stuff too, coming down the line. But anyway, Eberly Stock, I can't tell you everything about it because it's not released yet, but they have they're going to keep the mainframe. The mainframe's not going anywhere. It's still a great frame. I used it all year, loved it. But they're coming out with a new system. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, so I'm being kind of careful. They have a new system coming out that's updated. It's a little more streamlined, a little sleeker, more flexible, but still got all the same features you love from Eberly Stock. And I'm really, like, legit excited about this new kind of line they got coming out. And then to go along with that, some new packs, which, and I hope I'm not saying too much, but I'm not going to go into sizes and details and all that because it's not public yet, but they made some huge improvements on their packs. So I ran the Vapor series this year, the Vapor 2500 and the Vapor 5000. Great packs. Pretty simplistic, but great packs nonetheless. But they came out with some new ones to go along with this new system that they're coming out with. And they made like probably a dozen small but really awesome like changes to the features that make them super, super good packs. So be on the lookout for that. And if you're going to be at the expo in Salt Lake, which I will be there, so if you are, shoot me a message on Instagram. Let's link up. But if you're going to be there, you can check it out. I think they're going to like go live with that stuff at the expo. You can get your hands on it and be on the lookout on the Eberly Stock page because it's cool new stuff, guys. Aside from that, Leupold, they just rolled out their new VX6 HD Gen 2, which I have one. I have not got a chance to set it up on a rifle yet, but a couple new features. The dial, the turret on the top, you can now remove that turret without any tools. It stays secure on the scope, but you can take it off in the field without any tools and make adjustments if you need, which is huge because before, you know, I was always carrying around that tiny little Allen key, and it kind of, frankly, I was always paranoid of getting somewhere, needing to make an adjustment, and not having the Allen key because it's so small. It's not like a size you can just find anywhere. So no more stressing about Allen keys and losing them. You can now whip that turret off without any tools and make adjustments. Huge feature. They improved the tracking on it. So the deviations on the tracking are much, much tighter, which is going to mean more accuracy out at range. There's a few other kind of improvements. I think the optical clarity and quality and low light capability is also vastly improved. So it's not just a, you know, rebranded same scope trying to sell you something. It's definitely a big improvement. So if you're in the market for what I think is probably one of the best, if not the best, hunting optics on the market from an American-made company, definitely check out the Leupold VX6 HD Gen 2. And they came out with the BX4 Gen 2 binos, which they have a removable, changeable, adjustable eye cup, as well as better glass, and they're slick. And they're going to be coming out with a Gen 2 range bino soon, which I ran those quite a bit this year as well. They're really good range binos. Good quality glass. And I even handed those, some of my buddies on the Audad hunt were running Swaro range, EL ranges, which are very nice, of course. And I handed my Leupold range binos to them, and they're like genuinely impressed. Like, oh, these are good glass. So, you know, that just goes to show they're right up there with the best stuff on the market. And it's a great company, and it's an American company. So, I love Leupold. I was able to hang out with those guys. Had some great conversations with them. They invited me out to have sushi with them, which was super fun. So I got to hang out with the crew and get a little, you know, social interaction, which was really cool. Cause again, last year was a much more formal kind of meeting, you know, didn't know them that well. And after working with them for a while now and being able to kind of hang out and get dinner with them, I was very humbled that they would invite me, first of all. And the sushi was amazing. And we had a great time. So really, really happy with those guys and with that relationship. So I'd appreciate it if you guys would support Leupold too. And you can trust you're getting quality stuff. So moving on from that, Manfrotto, my tripod that I've been running all year, the Alpha Shot line. Again, really excited that quality tripod company like Manfrotto has decided to make something for the shooting and hunting world. They came out with another new tripod that's actually even smaller and lighter than their current lineup. And it's still tall enough you can glass fully standing up, which is something I really like. But the biggest improvement for Manfrotto right now is on the original Alpha Shot lineup, you were kind of limited to their proprietary plate that would fit from your optic or your rifle or whatever onto their system. So if you wanted to attach your rifle, you kind of had to use the saddle or attach a Manfrotto plate, same with your optic. And I told them from day one, you got to get ARCA adaptable stuff. So they did. They listened. They have now all their tripods. They have a great ball head that you can get, and they're all ARCA adaptable. So you can throw your ARCA rifle right on there, or your optics, which, you know, Leupold, their spotters now have integrated ARCA already on them. You don't need a plate. But huge improvement for Manfrotto going to ARCA. So that just shows their commitment to improving their product line and the Alpha Shot line for hunters and outdoorsmen and shooters. So check out the Alpha Shot tripod for sure. Let's see, MDT. MDT, they're a newer partner of mine. Great company. They make the Hunt 26 chassis, that carbon fiber foldable stock chassis that weighs 26 ounces. I ran that on, I think, like 75% of my hunts this year. Great system. Super easy to put on. Like, if you want to upgrade your rifle and put a new chassis on there, it's like two or three screws, and it's very easy to put on your rifle, and it's a great, great product. And their bipods I ran all year as well. I was running the SkyPod. Great bipod, very sturdy, a little heavy, to be honest, a little chunky, but they just came out with, well, they kind of acquired, there's a bipod maker out of New Zealand that was making some stuff, some really good lightweight hunting bipods, and they actually acquired that product from that company. So now MDT is offering their backcountry bipod, which is insanely light. I mean, it is feather light. Like, you don't even feel the thing on your rifle. I'm not kidding. It's so light. It's carbon fiber. It's got twist lock legs, so it's very quiet, quick, and easy to deploy, and it just weighs nothing, and it's very solid. It's ARCA and Picatinny adaptable. So if you have an ARCA rail or a Picatinny rail on your rifle or optic, or not optic, if you have it on your rifle, it's ready to go for that. They may make a swivel stud adaptable one at some point, but not sure. But it's a really good bipod, and actually it won, like, I think it won like best new product or something. It won some award from SHOT Show. So a very good improvement in their product line. Also, they have some really killer muzzle brakes I'm going to try out this year. And I also use their scope rings, their elite scope rings this year, which are probably the best scope rings I've ever used. You know, obviously, very secure, but also the alignment right out of the box is spot on. No need for lapping, any of that stuff. Pretty much everything MDT makes is top-notch quality, so check them out. And it was cool to see some of my images. They use some of my images on their booth, so it was really cool to see my ugly mug on the MDT booth. so check out MDT. Lastly, Mountain Ops, they were there as well. And they, I know they have a couple new things. They have a new flavor on their, performance bars, which are one of my favorites. My favorite's the peanut butter flavor, but they came out with a new cookie dough flavor. That's really good. And also I'm really impressed with Mountain Ops's like gym and lifestyle apparel. I'm wearing right now a grid fleece that they just came out with, which, you know, I've tried grid fleeces from literally pretty much everybody, Stone Glacier, Kuyu, everybody. And this is one of my favorite ones I've ever worn. It's got a full-on, like, kangaroo pouch pocket in the front, two chest pockets, you know, full, like, all, I'd say almost a half zip. The hood is good. You can zip it all the way up, kind of like the Stone Glacier ones, but it's not as tight as the Stone Glacier. Like, the Stone Glacier ones look a little goofy, kind of, because they, like, hug your head, which is fine for hunting, but if you want to wear it, like, to the gym or out, it looks kind of weird. This one's got more of, like, a normal hood. It's got your thumb holes, all the stuff. It's got all the stuff you want, and it's really just a really good, comfortable, good-looking grid fleece. And they have tons of good gear, so check out Mountain Ops for their, like, gym and lifestyle apparel. Obviously, their supplements. I use their creatine every day, Ignite every day, the bars almost every day. They have some other really great supplements for, like, weight loss or protein. Anyway, they got everything. And that's one of the few where you also can use my code over there. Use code Quest, save 20%. And they also do a lot of stuff on the nonprofit side, feeding hungry folks. So great company. Stoked to be working with them more this year and check them out. So those were the main new things that I, you know, saw at the show that I'm really excited about. Great stuff. And I'm stoked to get my hands on some of this new stuff and be able to tell you more about it in the future. But the last thing I want to talk to you about, which is this big kind of exciting announcement, is that about 2 weeks ago, I signed an agreement, and I am now working with Browning Firearms. So Browning is obviously a huge name, great American company, been around for a long, long time, based in Utah. You know, I think it's pretty cool. Like, I'm a huge World War II history buff, and you know, I listen to audiobooks all the time, and they talk about dudes with BARs, which is the Browning automatic rifle. My dad has been shooting Browning shotguns since forever. I have a few old Brownings that my dad gave me that are really cool. And their X-Bolt rifle line is killer. You know, they have everything from kind of like the baseline. I think the Speed 2 is what they call the baseline X-Bolt, all the way up to, you know, basically a custom rifle. They have the X-Bolt Pro Macmillan Carbon, which is carbon fiber barreled rifle, Macmillan stock. Just super cool. I mean, basically like a custom rifle, and an awesome, you know, just company in the outdoor space that's just been around for a long time and has a great reputation. The other thing that's cool about the Speed 2 is it's really adjustable, I guess you could say. Like, you can adjust the comb on the cheek piece up and down pretty easily. And then also you can adjust the grip to a more traditional kind of rifle grip to a more vertical rifle grip, which I've really grown accustomed to shooting that more vertical palm swell type grip. So they're doing some amazing things. And, you know, when I was talking to him, I had never shot an X-Bolt, but I spoke to Brady Miller over at Go Hunt and a couple other of my friends who were like, also spoke to Jason Vincent at Field Ethos and another one of my friends who's ex-Navy Special Warfare. some of the biggest gearheads, biggest gun guys I know, and asked them about the X-Bolt, what their impressions were, you know, off the air, off the record. All of them gave me amazing reviews. You know, it's it's right up there, can compete accuracy wise right out of the box with anything else on the market. And again, a great American brand. Really excited to be working with them. And also, you know, before I'd even agreed, you know, we had signed the agreement, they sent me an X-Bolt to try, and really impressed with it. Great rifle. I'm really excited. You know, I'm hoping to try out some of their, you know, more high-end stuff, not knocking the other stuff, but I'm really looking forward to hopefully trying out one of their McMillan carbon fiber rifles. The one I have now is the Speed 2, and it's a great, great rifle at a really, really great price point. But I'm looking forward to trying out some of their stuff too. But yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of detail to go into. Basically, I was shooting Weatherby last year. They're amazing rifles, great company. They're also a great, you know, great brand, great marketing, great product, great American company. But you know, this was a really good opportunity that came to work with Browning, a company that I've loved for a long time. I think I had one of their Browning Buckmark decals on my truck when I was 16, and one of my favorite hats when I was a kid, you know, running around hunting, was a Browning hat. And so really cool to just be associated with a great American brand with a great reputation. And they're, you know, just from talking to other folks in the industry, you know, another guy that spoke very highly of Browning when I was doing my kind of research was Joseph Von Benedict from the Backcountry Hunt podcast, another super knowledgeable gun guy. And everybody really respects Browning within the industry. So I am really stoked to be working with them. And it was just a great opportunity that came along, and I was pleased to be able to accept that. So that's my big announcement right now. And hopefully that'll be a long-term relationship. You know, I've shot a couple different rifles over the years. They've all been great, but sometimes it does come down to a business decision. You know, I think there's great rifles from many, many different companies these days, and I've talked about it before, but sometimes you got to make a decision that's based not only on product quality, but also just what's a good decision for me, my family, my business, and on every front. This is a good decision for me, and I'm really stoked to be working with Browning. And, you know, I know for a fact that the other rifles I've shot in the past are great products and great companies as well, but this is just a great opportunity. So I went with it, and I'm stoked. So, yeah, guys, that's pretty much it. I feel like I've been talking a lot, and that's pretty much it, guys. So be on the lookout for all this new stuff. If you're going to be at the expo, again, hit me up on Instagram. Let's link up. Let's say hi. And looking forward to seeing you guys. Please continue to keep supporting the show. I'll say it again. Subscribe, YouTube, follow along, and share it with friends and family. That's the biggest thing. It's just word of mouth. Getting the name out there. And I will continue to do my absolute best and work hard to bring you guys great, authentic, real content. And partners and products that I believe in and enjoy. So thank you guys for your support, and we'll see you on the next one. When I was thinking through and considering this decision, you know, to move to Browning, is not a decision that I took lightly. I wanted to make sure that it was not just a great business opportunity, but that I would still be using a product that I was excited about and happy with, and, you know, that was top level quality product that I would, you know, be willing to put my name on and recommend to you guys and to stand behind and say, this is a quality rifle. I can authentically say that I'm confident if you follow my lead and decide to pick up an X-Bolt, you will not be disappointed. their amazing firearms. And like I said, I'm not going to make any decision purely based on, you know, business and whatever. Like, I will never leave one company for another just because of dollars. So I wanted to make sure that when I made this decision, it was the right one. And I did my due diligence. I got my hands on an X-Bolt rifle. I talked to a lot of guys who are well-respected and know what they're talking about. And I was comfortable after lots of thinking, talking, and prayer that this was a good decision that I can proudly and confidently put my name behind Browning Rifles.